You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. A little over 10 years ago, Roman Mars first produced his hit podcast 99% Invisible from his bedroom. The show tells the stories behind design and architecture that we don't tend to notice, whether it's a mailbox or a skyscraper built decades ago. 99% Invisible started as an idea right here at KALW, where Roman was volunteering to learn audio production. 400 million downloads later, today it's one of the most popular podcasts. Now, Roman is telling some of these stories off the mic and on the page. His new book is called The 99% Invisible City, a field guide to the hidden world of everyday design, and it's a New York Times bestseller. KALW's Janae Darden sat down with Roman Mars, who back in the day also worked on this show, Cross Currents.
So, Roman, when did you get the radio bug?
I got the radio bug in the 90s. I was like studying plant genetics. I was a graduate student, and I listened to public radio all the time. It was my only form of entertainment. I couldn't afford a television. I couldn't afford really anything. And I just loved the way people talked on public radio. I loved the storytelling. I was obsessed with it. And at some point, I realized that if I could study a new thing every day, the way people seem to do on public radio, like read a new book, think about a new thing, talk to a new person, that would be the perfect life. And that was the radio bug. I just knew that there was a job there. I didn't know what that job was. I didn't know what it was called. And I just tried to knock on every door until someone gave me some kind of job to learn how to do it.
Was that door KALW?
At that door, the only people who opened the door was KALW. And it was a godsend. I mean, it really was amazing. And at the time, you know, because it was this sort of fallow ground that had, you know, so much potential, I was able to work on, create shows. I worked on every type of show. I was an engineer. I fixed the ISDN. I ran the board. I filled in on Morning Edition. I did every type of job that was available at KALW to learn how to do radio. And they gave so much to me into what I am today is because of KALW.
You know, a lot of people right now, they're rethinking their life. You know, we're in quarantine, things have shut down. And you went from grad school to, I know you worked at a startup, to working at KALW. Was there any fear about changing careers?
I came from pretty humble beginnings, and I always knew I could sort of get by on whatever I could do, whatever I could make do on. And so I rented a room in someone's house at the time, that the way I was able to afford, you know, being a volunteer at KALW. And so I had a ton of fear and a ton of doubt, but I just have always found that taking the most interesting path and trying to do really what you want to do in life, it pays off. It's worth it. Even if you don't achieve it exactly the way you think you're going to, the process of figuring that stuff out is still worth it. And so,
congratulations, 10 years on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. You ever think it would evolve to what it has today?
No, because honestly, you know, it was a 4.5-minute segment that ran in the C block of Morning Edition. That's how it started on KALW. I didn't really envision it as a podcast at all, even at the very beginning. You know, being a podcast at the time meant something very different than it does today. I mean, like, there was no business around podcasting. There was no industry around podcasting. So, but I did make the show with longevity in mind.
10 years, the show has evolved, and I imagine you have evolved.
Yeah.
Also, as you being more famous now. I mean, I know, I'm sure paparazzi isn't following you down the street.
Not really, no.
But, you know, you have so many followers.
Yeah,
people know who you are. How does that affect you, you know?
I can walk down the streets of Berkeley and Oakland unmolested. You know, like, it is not really an issue for me. So fame doesn't intersect with my life very much. But you just can get more done in a way. Like, there's a real privilege to things. So, like, when I was, you know, going to sell a book, you know, I had this platform, I had this show that I could present it to, I had people that who would want to buy it. And because of that, all these big companies want to meet with you and talk to you. And, you know, I mean, they're not bad people or anything like this, but they just don't, it's not about the quality. It's not about, like, you doing something, some great piece of art. It's because you have a platform and you can sell it, and they know that. And mm-hmm. And so that's what that gets you, is opportunity. But the main thing is having an audience who cares. There's plenty of people that are more famous than I am that still can't, you know, get people to maybe support their art or buy a book or something like that. But like over time, you know, we built this through a kind of public radio mindset and a public radio model that people were a part of the process of building the show and felt like they, you know, contributed because they truly did. Like there was an existential point, you know, when I did the first Kickstarter and KLW kind of gave it to me to be independent and raise money on it, that they took it and made it important. And if it wasn't for the audience making it important, we would not exist today.
So let's talk about the book.
Okay.
What did you like about storytelling through a book? Or did you like it?
I didn't like it. It was hard. I didn't like it as much.
really?
No. I mean, so since the show started, I've been propositioned to do a book, but I never felt like there was a real need. And there was a turning point where I felt there was a need. And that was, one is it allowed me to tell a few different stories that were kind of complicated and visual that you just can't do on the radio or in a podcast quite the same way. So it allows you like a few more options. And the other one was, you know, I've done 415 episodes of this show. As much as audio is the most superior form of storytelling and communication that there is in the world for all time.
Ooh, I know some people that would disagree with that. I agree with you, but I know some people that would be like,
well, they are wrong. So audio is perfect. As much as I love it, it is kind of locked in to this linear, rather non-searchable format. Like it's there to be experienced. And it's not there to be archived as much, and it's not there to be re-experienced very well. Like, say, for example, you came across a curb cut, and you're like, I remember there was a 99% Invisible episode about it. What was it called? And you could search the website, and the website is functional, but then you have to listen to the whole 30-minute show about it to get the full story. And it was just like all this information was locked into this one format, and I wanted to break it apart and have it available to people to like search and peruse, and like if they needed to find that one name, they could find it. And so the show is about design. I'm a big believer in purposeful, intentional design. And there was a reason for the book to exist besides just have it be, you know, like a merchandising extension of the podcast.
When I was in journalism school, I used to hear everybody has a story. And I feel like with this book and with your show, everything.
Yeah, every story. In my response to that, because I hear that every person has a story, is not everyone knows how to tell their story. And that takes time and skill to do. And when you're telling the story of objects, it's even more so. You know, you have to pick the right thing and decide what you're going to do. I mean, there's the book is not a collection of origin stories for these objects. It's not like the origin of the traffic light or the origin of a, you know, manhole cover. It's really, we try to tell the most interesting story of the thing that exists in the world. And it could be anywhere in the world. And the idea is that the things around you spur this, you know, like this curiosity about the most interesting version of that thing around you and why it is the way it is, you know, where you are in this moment. So
you close out your show saying that you're in beautiful downtown Oakland. What's your favorite architecture and design in Oakland?
Well, I love the Tribune Tower, which is right across the street from the office. I love the neon clock face. I think it's beautiful. I think it's this great icon and beacon in the city. But it's really not the big buildings that do it as much for me as the street level experience. And so, like, I love Chinatown. I love the smells of Chinatown. I like that scramble walk that's right there where it's a crisscross walk and it's beautiful and has this ornate painting on the street.
Yeah. All right, so 10 years is your anniversary. Where will Roman Mars be 10 years from now?
Oh, my God. Retired is what I hope. Like, I've worked pretty much a full-time job since I was 14 years old. Like, I am so tired. My goal in the next 10 years is to develop experiencing the world not mediated through my need to produce content related to me experiencing the world. And it's sort of like a meta existential question, but I really want to just enjoy things because like I've been a professional appreciator of things and I want to be an amateur appreciator of things.
That was podcast host and author Roman Mars speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. His book is The 99% Invisible City, a field guide to the hidden world of everyday design.